Bedrosian throws to Sandberg, and the pitch is grounded to second base. Thompson has it, throws to first. It's over. 27 years of waiting have come to an end. The Giants have won the pennant.
Welcome back to Thompson to Clark. When Brad is away, I make a few, I guess they're not calls, they're social media messages. I send a few out, but usually the first one that I make is to our special guest, Jared Seidler from Baseball Prospectus. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much. Always a pleasure to be on and to discuss. There's always topics to discuss in the Giants universe. It's an endlessly fascinating team.
What's funny is not the last time you came on, but the time before that, is right around the news when Buster Posey was named president of baseball operations. And we had this discussion, and I could sense that you're like, I did not see this one coming.
No. And I did not. No.
And so, but now we have some data, some experience. We have, you know, many games underneath the belt of the first season of Buster Posey as president of baseball ops. So I do want to hit on that. I do want to hit on, reason why I want you to explain this to me is because the Giants supposedly their farm system kind of ranked a little bit higher of late. And I was trying to figure out why, because I didn't really sense it was because of the prospects necessarily that they got back from some of the trades. But we'll talk about that because I want you to explain to me how that works. And then we'll talk a little bit about some of the late season things that they may be doing. And I have a question that I wanted to talk to Jared about concerning the Giants managerial position for 2026. So we'll leave that as a tease because I've been thinking about this pretty much all year long, and I'm starting to see some signs about the possibility. So we'll talk about that at the end of the show. But Jared, give me your, I don't know if we could even do a grade, because it's like, how can you grade someone's first season of baseball as head of baseball ops? They're inheriting another team, though Buster has made a lot of moves, right? Like, he has definitely been active. But has this been what you thought it was going to be, or was it a little bit different?
I think it's around like the median outcome. So when we initially discussed this like 10 months ago, one of the points I recall making was that I have absolutely no clue what Buster Posey is going to be like running a team, because he just didn't have any relevant experience. Like, he wasn't, you know, there's no like tree you can go to. The closest thing to that is the Giants from back in the Brian Sabian era, right? And he's kind of done some of the same things. You know, there's a proclivity for big name veteran splashy moves. You know, he signed Willie Adames, he traded for Rafael Devers. Even kind of moving down into the draft, like, their draft was very heavy on like name college players, which, you know, Buster Posey is one of the great name college players himself of all time. So that kind of makes sense.
And he kind of priced himself, priced himself out of the first few picks. And that's why he fell to the Giants, is because he was like, I'm going to cost you a lot if you pick me, and thus scared some of the cheaper teams away. And the Giants were like, great, come on, come along.
That was back in the day before the draft pools were hard slotted, so you could do more of that type of thing. These days that wouldn't work, because the team would just go, you know, screw you, I'm taking you anyway, which happens all the time now. Most of the time you don't even hear about it. Like, I'll hear about it, but that doesn't even make it out now. So that doesn't work as well as it used to. When was he drafted? Like 2009, around there?
I think the year before that, maybe.
Yeah, late 2000s, which is wild to think that a guy that was a high first-round pick in the late 2000s is already running a team. But, right. He's unusually young, right? So it's kind of like about what I would have expected. He's kind of managing like a basically like a lot of GMs did 10 to 15 years ago. And I suggested at the time that they hired him that that might be a better path than being like the 22nd best modern process team.
Little bit of a zag.
Right, just because you're going to do more interesting stuff. You're going to take risks like on Devers that other teams aren't going to do. And, you know, I think in the first 2 to 3 years of that trade's probably going to look pretty good for them, maybe less so down the long slide. And I think that's already kind of started to play out and that, you know, obviously the teams went to absolute crap since they traded for Devers, but Devers himself has been pretty good. It's not him per se. So there's kind of, I don't want to say a lack of creativity because the Devers trade itself was somewhat creative, but it's a lot of, you know, big names, guys that you would expect them to go after. You know, Willie Adams made a lot of sense. Matt Chapman resigning made a lot of sense. I know that was technically before him, but I think he was the driving force on it.
Yeah, he was at the finish line there.
Right. You know, Justin Verlander on a 1-year deal is within that construct, something that you would expect. And then when they decided to sell around the deadline, which I think was the right call based on where they were in the standings at the time, and just the congestion in the second tier of the wild card race that you've kind of seen play out, where the Mets are now 4.5 games clear. And it looks like the wild cards are probably mostly settled going into September. You know, even they traded for big name prospects in most senses. Like Drew Gilbert was a first round draft pick that was traded for Justin Verlander. Blake Tidwell was a second round draft pick with, you know, they both played for the same Tennessee team. You know, even some of the more minor trades, like Jesus Rodriguez and the Camilo Duval trade, was, you know, they clearly wanted to target a starting catcher prospect, you know, to pair with Patrick Bailey down the road. And, you know, Rodriguez kind of fit within that construct. I thought they did okay at the deadline. Like, I think they've done a lot of things that were okay. There's not a lot of creativity or really interesting stuff going on here. They've just made a lot of moves that are like B-minus, C-plus moves. And it's not going to work out this year, but I appreciate that they tried. A lot of teams don't try anymore.
Right. And so, okay, so here's a question, which is, we talked about the Devers trade. Again, like literally not that far after it happened, you came on with me. And
I think I was already scheduled to come on and then the trade happened.
Maybe that's what correctly. It was.
Yeah.
So it's the trade for Devers. We talked about the pros and cons of that, but it did feel, and this is where Buster may be leaning, which is the fan base is very much used to Farhan saying we're in on everybody and getting nobody. And for reasons of, you know, a lot of risk management on his end, but this was a very anti Farhan kind of move, or at least a deal in which Farhan would maybe not be able to get done for good reasons, probably based on some of the things that scared off teams about Devers. But I think Posey's willingness to go there with Devers was a little bit of a sign. But if you look at the record, I think the Giants are the worst team in baseball since that trade. Now, yeah. I think there's a lot of flaw in just blaming, you know, whatever you want to blame on that. There are other things that happened. I think, you know, one of the things that Brad and I kept talking about, and I was pushing this one, was the Giants are not as good as their record says. And I've seen this before. And then, but I just didn't expect them to fall so hard. They since 2021, they've had a really hard time putting two halves of the season together. And that's what I expected here. And that's what happened. They could not stand up to what the first half of the season was. So I guess my question is being the sort of doing the anti-Farhan deal, does that fit into your model of, hey, maybe instead of being really bad at this stuff, we lean the other way and possibly gain something by zagging?
So yes, there's an old Andrew Friedman quote, which is funny because Farhan comes from the Andrew Friedman tree in you know, he worked for the Dodgers. He went back to the Dodgers after he left the Giants. That if you are rational on every free agent, you are going to come in third on every free agent because it's, you know, it's the winner's curse situation. You're almost always going to overpay in a free market where there's relatively limited assets, especially at the top end players. So something like that Devers deal, you're only going to be able to get that unique type player if you make a trade that's a little bit nuts, because players like that don't get traded very often, and especially during the season, especially when they have multiple years of control, and Devers is signed for like 8 or 9 more years. Kind of the same thing in free agency. They kind of jumped the market a little bit for Willy Adames. And, you know, I thought that contract was fine. I thought it was about what I expected him to get. But that may have been like a slight mistake. But also, if they didn't sign Willy Adames, they're like, we're not a great run of shortstops that were available in free agency, right? So sometimes you just gotta go out and get the guy that you want. And that was a problem that Farhan had, was that he was always looking for the value in the deal as opposed to just getting a deal done. Like, you need somebody to play shortstop, you needed a number three hitter, like, you just need players at some point. Some of the, like, the best guys at this, like Friedman, or like David Stearns, or, you know, Dave Dombrowski, like the best long-term GM or team presidents are able to blend both. They're able to be selectively really aggressive and kind of pick and choose. I don't think Buster's going to be there anytime soon, but... you know, again, given the situation that the Giants are in, where they have, you know, an ownership group that's willing to spend, you know, there's been jokes for years about how nobody would take their money because they kept coming in second place on all of the really big free agents. But I think the ownership group is willing to spend. And they really didn't have the facility to go out there and get a clear top baseball ops name. And, you know, I think this is better than kind of continuing to plod along as a second tier process team. I think you're going to see a lot of ups and downs over however long this Posey run lasts. But, you know, he really hasn't made any deal that's like been completely catastrophic or anything. Yeah. Like, he hasn't traded away, you know, recklessly traded away a bunch of top prospects. Like, they didn't go out at the deadline and like move like Joswar Gonzalez for like a rental and like a 15% chance to make the playoffs, or, you know, move Johnny Level for like a guy with a year and a half of control. Like, they made a sober, pretty rational decision that, you know, we're going to soft sell. We're going to sell off our levers, basically. And I think that was the right call. There's nothing to me that indicates that Posey's going to be a top president of baseball operations. There's nothing to me that indicates he's going to be a disaster. There were a lot of people within the industry that predicted he was going to be a disaster just based on the lack of experience, or based on like things Will Clark said on his podcast and stuff like that. That hasn't borne out either. He's put some smart, interesting people in place below him. I think they're going to plot along as kind of an aggressive team that is interested in the top free agent and trade names, but probably is not going to do anything like super creative in terms of like going after guys that, you know, going after like relievers to convert to starters or anything like that. Like, they seem like a team that's kind of playing it straight up right now, which is fine. If you're willing to spend a lot of money and be really aggressive, that's a perfectly decent way to build a team. You know,
that Hicks deal that Farhan did.
Yeah.
It may have turned out to help the Giants with the trade asset, because I don't know what he's doing in Boston. I just know that
he's been bad in the Boston bullpen.
Yeah, I just know that a lot of the Boston folks who I know, they were like, why is this guy now our project? Like, why did we take? But it's probably because they did start Hicks for a little while. It probably raised his value at least a little bit.
Yeah, I think that was also a financial evener. So they, you know, kind of, I think he had about $20 million left on his contract. And I think instead of, you know, sending cash along, they took back the Jordan Hicks contract. Like, it just kind of is what it is.
What have you heard about Harrison?
So he was in the mix to start this weekend for them. They decided to go with Peyton Tolley instead, who's their top pitching prospect and is one of the top pitching prospects in the minor leagues at this point. He was a second rounder out of TCU last year, and he's just like absolutely lit it up since the draft. Yeah, I mean, they sent him to AAA, and he's been Kyle Harrison. Like, he's walking a little too many guys and not striking out enough guys, and he's kind of that. Like, there's no like big leap or anything. A lot of times, I got the sense when Boston traded him, they were going to make some pitch mix adjustments and pitch shape adjustments. A lot of times when you trade for a younger prospect mid-season, you'll let them finish out the season and then try and make those changes in the offseason or the next year's spring training, because it's just easier to do than it is to do mid-season. So if they have, you know, some type of pitch usage plan or a new pitch they want to try and teach him, that might not show up until next year. But yeah, he's just kind of been what he was with you guys the last couple of years in AAA for them, and has not gotten called back up yet.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's so interesting to see when he came up how hard he was throwing. And I'm sure some of that was something that they saw that was just not going to be anything but an injury issue for him probably. But then to precipitously lose the velocity, and then this year he somehow got it back up into the mid-90s, I think there was real hope. Like, okay, the arm strength is back. Now, can he get more of the swings and misses that he was expecting to get, which is why he walked so many people, kind of like, you know, Lincecum back in the day, right? Like, if you just... If you put the dot around home plate about balls and strikes, like, Lincecum got so many swinging strikes on balls that were outside of the strike zone. And that if people were able to lay off and force him to throw strikes, he would have been way more hittable. But when you don't have that, and we're starting to see that with Carson Wisenhunt, this guy throws anything near the strike zone and it has a possibility of getting hammered if it's not his changeup. So like, I think we were hoping as fans, like, okay, velocity's back, he'll get more swing and miss, and it just never happened.
Yeah, while you were talking, I looked up his metrics, and yeah, he was averaging 94.2 in AAA for the Sacramento, and he's averaging 94.1 in Worcester. So basically the same velocity. He's hit 97 a couple of times. That's about what he was hitting on the top end in Sacramento. You know, it's release points a little bit up. That might just be measuring difference or whatever. But yeah, he's not getting, you know, he's not getting swings and misses, really. And that's been the issue for him since 2023, probably. You know, since he started having that injury run. Boston's really good at this type of pitching development. They've even flipped a couple of guys in this situation. Like, they traded for Quinn Priester, kind of worked out his situation, and then traded him on to Milwaukee, and he's had a real nice season in Milwaukee. If there's a plan there, that I don't think they've executed it yet. He's just kind of chugging along in the Kyle Harrison mold.
So looking at the Giants farm system there, it's funny because, you know, in the Giants social media ecosystem, you know, the new, I think it's the MLB rankings came out, and it was like, oh, the Giants have bumped up like several steps. Yeah. And so the way I looked at it, I was like, okay, we've added Level and Josuar Gonzalez, and those guys have actually gone up the charts.
Yeah.
And they added able bodies near the middle because of these trades. But how do you look at what they've done? And because what I'm trying to see is, are they actually better at this? Have they improved? or is it just the addition of some bodies that have caused, you know, the rankings to for them to be ranked higher or whatever?
So Gonzalez was a guy that they signed in the January 2025 IFA pool. But that deal was actually agreed to probably 3 or 4 years ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And he, by the time he signed, he was already considered the top prospect in that international class. He had moved ahead of Ilian Pena with the Mets, who was kind of the other contender. And that kind of played out in the DSL this year. It's a really good defensive shortstop. He's got some positive hitting ability as well, a switch hitter. So he's a guy that, you know, he was on our midseason top 50. He's going to be in the top 50 when we do the top 101 prospects, most likely in the offseason as well. So the addition of that type of prospect is going to bump your team up. Same thing with Johnny Level, a switch hitter they signed 2 years ago, who was one of the better players in the Dominican Summer League in 2024. And then went to the domestic complex and was even better this year, and is in low A now. And he's struggled at low A, but he's also 18 at low A, and that's a thing that happens. He was a guy that we considered putting on the midseason top 50. He's kind of a compact, like, kind of, you know, puts a charge into the ball type of guy. I really like him. I've really liked him for about a year and a half now. Just kind of a fun prospect. And again, coming into the season, he was not someone that was in top 100 consideration for anybody. And I think he's going to make our top 101. He's going to be towards the bottom. They also, Bo Davidson kind of really popped up this year. Was an undrafted free agent a couple of years ago who put up, like, kind of some really nutty lines at the low levels of the minors in 2024, but it's, like, really old for the levels, and it was kind of in really small sample sizes. So I don't think,
and the Giants have had a couple of guys like that who have petered out since.
Right. And but this time he's continued to hit, and he's hit his way into, you know, like, he's another potential top 100 type prospect. So you've got that going on. They also traded for, you know, Gilbert and Tidwell and Tristan Vierling and Jesus Rodriguez. These aren't guys that are going to be at, like, the top of a prospect list, but, you know, Gilbert and Tidwell might be towards the bottom of a top 10. Jesus Rodriguez might be towards the bottom of the top 10. Gilbert might end. I don't think Gilbert's going to end up graduating, but I may have misread his call update, so who the heck knows. Carson Wisenhunt still hasn't graduated yet, so even though I think his stock's a little bit down this year, he's going to count towards prospect lists right now if you're looking at prospect lists. And then they did, a lot of people really liked Gavin Killen, who is the kid they drafted in the first round out of Tennessee. I am not one of them. I did not particularly like that pick. It was okay, like, for where they took him in the middle of the first round. But there's people that have him as a top 100 caliber prospect, too. And then Bryce Eldridge who's the top prospect in the system by a decent amount, pretty much held serve. So, you know, coming into the season, we had him in the mid-teens. I think he's still basically in the mid-teens. He's had a decent season in the upper minors, a little more swing and miss than you'd like. But yeah, it's a combination of, they've had some pop-up prospects, they drafted relatively high in the first round, and they traded for some guys. So they're going to kind of creep up a little bit.
So do you think, so what don't you like about Killam, and also who would you kind of compare him to? Because the last time the Giants, at least as far as I can remember, the Giants drafted a second baseman high was Joe Panik, who for a couple of years was very fundamental to their success, but obviously he's not in Major League Baseball anymore.
Killam's fine. So if I'm drafting, I think they had like the 12th or the 13th pick or somewhere around there. I should probably actually know that. You know, it was the 13th pick. he is a well-rounded player with no carrying standout type ability that's obvious. He's like okay at like a lot of things, but he's not particularly great at any of them. And to me, that's just like not really what you want in a first round pick that high. You know, it's kind of like a jack of all trades, you know, guy that we think has a pretty good chance to be like a decent regular. And in some ways that is Joe Panic, right? Like
yeah. That, yeah. You know, well, right. And that was my wonder is, do you think they will try and speed him through the system?
Probably. Like he was a good college player. He struggled a little bit more in conference play when the pitching got better. You know, his whiff rate slid back a little bit in his draft year because he transferred from Louisville to Tennessee. And Tennessee is much tougher level of competition, and his whiff rates went a little bit backwards. There's just like, there's not a ton of power here. I don't really think he's like a short shot shortstop. I think he probably is going to be a second baseman. There's not. Like his plate discipline is average, his power is average, his hit tool might be a little bit above average. Yeah, this sounds like Joe Panic, right?
Yeah. You know, actually, right. Sounds like Jung-Hoo Lee a little bit too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and if he's Jung-Hoo Lee, that's perfectly good for where they drafted him, right? Yeah. But yeah, it just wasn't. To me, if you're picking at the 13th pick, I personally want to take like a bigger shot there, which, you know, like they were in a little bit of a weird spot. It was like a 9 or 10 player draft in our estimation. And the last of the 9 or 10 players in that group went off one pick ahead of them. It was Gavin Fien. So, yeah, they didn't have a real creative draft. The kid they took in the third round, they didn't have a second round pick because of the Adama signing.
Mm-hmm.
And the third round pick was a kid out of Rutgers that like posted a really high batting average at Rutgers. The thing is, if it was like 370 or something like that. A kid that's hitting 370 at a major college and is really has like a lot of other good stuff going for him goes in the first round. So it's kind of like this weird, like adverse selection type thing. He was Trevor Cullen. He was a guy like I thought would have been like a nice pick for somebody in like the 6th, 7th, 8th round. Mm-hmm. And they took him in the third. For some reason, they took 3 players from Northeastern, which is not like a particular baseball hotbed. I genuinely do not know what was going on there.
Who took those trips to go scout that college?
Yeah, like, yeah, just like not just a strange thing to do. Yeah, so they kind of had what I would consider a fairly bland draft. They took one prep pitcher over a slot, but otherwise it was like a lot of very close to slot value college picks, which again was just kind of bland, not bad, just bland. And again, Killen was a fine pick at the 13th spot. I think we had him like 20th or whatever, and that's certainly within the range of reasonable fudge factors. It just wasn't the type of pick that I was particularly inspired by. I would rather take a shot on like a toolsy high school shortstop that has a higher chance to be a high ceiling player, you know, like Cason Cunningham or somebody like that.
So Rob also in the chat, he chimed in and was talking about Luis Hernandez, who's the Venezuelan kid who the Giants are rumored to be in the mix for.
Yeah, I mean, again, all of those deals are done years ahead of time. Like, Yeah, he's one of the top prospects in the 2026 class. Everybody expects them to sign him. Because these deals are done years ahead of time, the players are mostly not being scouted and seen within that time period. So your guess is as good as mine as to whether he's actually good or not. He's reputationally one of the best prospects in the class. But yeah, I don't know. Like, we tend not to rank those players until they've had a professional debut. There are outlets that are more aggressive in covering that team. Baseball America does a really good job at that. But yeah, it's just, to me, there's just way too much hype going on. And it's very hard to figure out who it is. But yeah, I mean, the Giants have been successful with both big and medium dollar signings in the international market over the last couple of years. But again, that's based on work that they would have done 3 to 5 years ago. It's not based on work that they would be doing now. But the more you learn about that international signing thing, the better it'll make you. So
Yeah.
I've written about that at great length in the past. The whole thing is it's criminal. The teams are agreeing to deals with like 11 and 12 year olds that can't actually be executed until they're 16. I just like find it reprehensible. But yeah, I mean they are linked to one of the top, you know, but some people have him as the top player. Other people have him as like the second or third player. Yeah, they are like one of the top players in the upcoming IFA pool.
Do you think the Giants are going to promote Eldridge later this year, give him a few ABs, and then really drive him to be the starting first baseman next year? Because the problem, and this is why I'm asking this question, is Devers and Eldridge and then they have other guys who kind of don't really have positions. You know, I don't think Encarnacion is a long-term fit. He couldn't even get on the field this year.
Yeah.
Wilmer is not a long-term fit. He's nearing the, you know, the end of his run, I'm guessing. But just the idea, like Buster's philosophy is, you know, we're going to play defense. We're going to pitch. You're going to have timely hitting. We're going to be more athletic. They're not athletic with so many DHs on the team today. But if you have Eldridge at first, then you're basically signifying that Devers is going to be your DH. And that's fine as long as both of those guys can fit in a lineup. But it doesn't add to your sort of athleticism. But then again, if they hit, then who cares? But just the idea that the Giants, you want to get more flexible, you want to get more athletic, you want to get more utility, those guys are kind of against the grain on that thinking.
Yeah. Geez. I don't think Eldridge is coming up this year. Their more recent comments over the last week or two have not really tipped in that direction. And also, if they were going to do that, they probably would have done it already. The safe harbor period for where you could call players up and keep the rookie eligibility for the PPI picks next year was last week. So there's some pitchers that have been delayed in coming up. Tolly is debuting tomorrow. Jonah Tong is debuting tomorrow. Just because of where teams were in rotations and stuff like that. But for the most part, I think that the top prospects that came up are pretty much up already. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be true. But if you were going to give them some run, you probably would have wanted them about a week ago. It's 45 days. Like you can call a guy up with 44 days left in the season and he's still rookie eligible for next year and he's still eligible for the prospect promotion incentive picks. He's pretty young. He doesn't need to go on the 40-man roster this offseason, I believe. They may start him in AAA next year as well. His contact rates have not been great, especially after the promotion, which, you know, as this is probably the fourth or fifth time I've discussed Bryce Eldridge on this platform. He's a really tall guy with really long arms. That's always going to be a problem. So it kind of has continued to be a problem. It's going to be a bigger problem the better the pitching gets, because they're able to change speeds, change eye levels, get the ball out in front more, then get the ball back more. So I think it's reasonable to take it relatively slow with Eldridge. I think if they were more in the race, and Dom Smith was struggling and Wilmer Flores was struggling, there's more of an argument for that. Long-term, positionally, I have no idea what they're going to do. That may depend more on personnel management of Rafael Devers as a human being more than anything, because as I'm sure most people listening to this know, the reason Rafael Devers is on the Giants is because the Red Sox were screwing with his position last year.
Yeah. Supposedly he's been fine there. Like the metrics suggest that he's been okay there.
I had an argument with a Red Sox fan who I'm friends with, like in spring and then in like April, about whether he'd be an adequate first baseman. And I was like, he's been a bad third baseman, but like he should be fine at first. And yeah, he's been fine. Eldridge has never really taken to first base defensively, and I don't know why, because again, he's a giant human being. He has some athleticism and agility. I wouldn't be shocked if they try him in the outfield again at some point. I know they tried that a couple of years ago and it didn't go great.
Or maybe they just flip-flopped them and Devers is at first and Eldridge DHs.
You could also just move them, you know, Devers could play first base 4 times a week and Eldridge could play first base 2.5 times a week. Like that's a thing you can do. You can rotate them too. Teams do that. The Yankees have been doing that at points this season where they've been flipping like Ben Rice and Paul Goldschmidt, depending on, you know, we'd like to give Rafi a half day off today, so he's going to DH and Eldridge is going to play first. Like that is a thing you can do. You can also trade Bryce Eldridge at some point.
Well, okay, so this is the other part of the conversation. I've been actually hearing about that more. Anytime you have a top prospect, that there's always discussion about that. But I've actually been hearing that more from the local media about the idea that because of the contact rate, as you were talking about, that he may not actually be the kind of player that they want to develop just by the style of hitting. Now, we haven't had somebody with prestigious power in San Francisco in quite a long time. Now we have Devers. To be able to add, if Eldridge, you know, was good, to have that power, that would be definitely a plus. But I've actually been hearing more about that of late, which is kind of interesting because it's not like he's playing poorly in AAA. He's still hitting the ball. He's hitting home runs. But it's almost like the souring, and this is something that's kind of happened to Marco Luciano, the souring on the top prospects when you bring them up. And I think personally, I think Farhan and company just botched the whole Luciano thing because they did not have a position for him. And they put him in.
There was no plan for what to do with him, like at any point.
They put him at shortstop in a big league series, and this dude was like a deer in headlights. Yeah. And I was just like, what are we doing? Like this, I get wanting to win ball games and throwing a guy in and saying sink or swim, especially an athlete like that, but at the same time, he is your baby deer here. He's the one that's supposed to come in and hit for this organization, and they just mishandled it. So like I do wonder, just it's almost like they can't present these guys in the way that they should be presented, and then when it doesn't happen, then all of a sudden their names are soured in the organization. And just I can't imagine that's good for leverage when you trade them. Like, you can't trade Luciano because he's soured across Major League Baseball. And though on the flip side, I was going to ask you about whether or not they try and there's no position for him because I think he's only a left fielder and we already have Eliot Ramos playing terrible left field. So maybe he comes in and hits left-handed pitching as a DH in some way. I'm sure you can fit him in, but he's another guy who has been hitting at AAA and is hitting some bombs. Like, do you sense that they will ever give him another shot to try and come up and hit at the big league level?
He feels like a guy that the organization's just kind of given up on, which is a thing that happens. We call this prospect fatigue. Like, this is this is the thing that happens both on the public side plus like organization. Like, Luciano has been a prominent prospect now since like 2018, 2019. He's not a prospect anymore. He's graduated, but he's still in that kind of, God, about 10 years ago, I named this the Dalton Pompey zone, and none of you listening know who Dalton Pompey is, which is kind of the point. The guys that just get caught in, like, you're not a prospect anymore, but you're also not a major leaguer. And Dalton Pompey never made it. He's like a guy I think is probably going to need a trade to get a chance. Maybe they'll pop him back in at some point. I don't know. But they have, again, they have a lot of guys to fit into that jigsaw puzzle. He also feels like a guy who could use some different voices in terms of coaching. Like, the swing decisions just never got there, and the bat to ball ability just never got there. The bat speed's always been there. He still has the ability to just absolutely pulverize the ball when he makes solid contact, but the pitch recognition's just not good. And he never found a defensive home, as you pointed out. I liked his shortstop defense to a point, but it was always like, he's going to keep growing. He's going to have to keep improving. And he kept growing, and he did not keep improving, which is a thing that happens.
Yeah.
Trying to fit all of this together is one of the hardest things about running a baseball team, because you have to be correct on which guys you decide are good and which guys you discard. That being said, there might be an opportunity to trade Eldridge for, let's say, a top of the rotation starting pitcher that's under control for a while. Maybe the Twins decide to make Joe Ryan available this offseason. You know, Bryce Eldridge for Joe Ryan would be the type of trade that I think would make a lot of sense within that construct. And, you know, there's always guys that become available that you don't realize are going to be available. I don't think Eldridge's value is hit that much in the industry. He's still very young, and he just hits the ball so hard. And yeah, that's a skill grouping that teams are really going to, you know, focus on and be really impressed with. And he's still 20 years old, and he's slugging over 500 in AAA. Like, that's a good season, even if there's some flaws there in terms of the strikeout rate or a lower batting average. But yeah, I mean, it's certainly possible that they move him at some point. I think if they do it, it's going to be for a top quality major league player with multiple years of control. I don't think it's going to be like a prospect for prospect type trade. Those just like almost never happen.
How real is, when new regimes come in, kind of frowning on the previous regime's prospects and draft picks? Is that real?
It can be. It's more that a new regime might not value the same thing. You know, you can speculate that maybe the Giants are keying more on guys with bat-to-ball ability, whereas Eldridge is a guy who just swings for the fences all the time and is a big power prospect. I don't know if that actually played out, because Rafael Devers is also kind of that type of player. But, you know, I think it's more that they like different things than sour on the player particularly. It does happen that there was, oh God, I can't believe I'm about to talk about Zach Scott on a Giants podcast. So Zach Scott, the former GM of the Mets turned D-tier social media personality, he was in charge of the draft in Boston the year before he took over the Mets. And the Mets drafted Pete Crow Armstrong with their first round pick in 2020. And Zach Scott became the GM of the Mets in 2021 and did not think Pete Crow Armstrong was very good because he was low on the Boston draft board, and traded him for Javier Baez, specifically because his view of Crow Armstrong was lower, having come from an organization that was lower on him. So that does happen. That's a finite example of that happening. But yeah, I think more often it's just that they value things a little bit differently.
All right, let's get to now. You've been great. I know you're not feeling well. I told you I would be very structured so we can get you out of here.
My voice is going. It's because I have an illness. It's not because I smoked 8 packs of cigarettes today.
Okay, now this is not a question necessarily about prospects or about, you know, baseball operations. It is more of like just a general baseball question, which is the Giants. Buster Posey, right around the time of the first half when the Giants were a pretty hot team, I think they'd actually gone into a tie with the Dodgers for first place in the NL West. Bob Melvin had an option, a team option. They picked it up mid-season, and it was a little bit of a sign of confidence for old Bob. And like we said, since the Devers trade, the Giants are like the worst team or one of the worst teams in baseball. So it hasn't worked out great since then. Now, there is some talk about whether or not they will actually have him back. Now, they picked up the contract, so I'm assuming they have to pay the money just because of what Buster did. But there's been talk about whether or not Bob comes back. And I've been talking about this pretty much the whole season. My fun idea for Buster Posey is to bring Bruce Bochy back for 3 more years. Now, Bochy gets kind of forced out because of Farhan. Yes. And Alex Pavlovich has a really, really good book about just a Giants history book. And one of the things that was really interesting that I don't even know if I realized back then, but when they were on to Bryce Harper trying to get him to come in, one of the questions that Bryce Harper asked Bruce Bochy was, well, are you going to be here if I sign? And Bruce Bochy had to be honest with him. He's like, I'm in my last year. Like, I don't know. I'm not really planning on it, sort of thing. And like the idea that, you know, new regime comes in and we got to push Bochy out. And I get it, but now we kind of have the old regime back. He's just in a younger skin with Buster Posey. And I do wonder what Bruce Bochy does well would kind of help Buster put some of these things together. And I think they would be, if Bruce Bochy was managing the Giants this year, I do think they would be a little bit better. How much better is arguable, because it's not like the Rangers are killing it. Like they're kind of in the wild card race themselves, but I would find it to be kind of poetic justice that the guy who wins 3 World Series is semi-forced out. Now, he's an older man now, but to come back and to help Buster Posey figure this whole thing out would kind of be an interesting play, and one that I think the fan base would embrace. What says you, man, the man with the smart baseball brain, about this harebrained idea that I have to bring Bruce Bochy back?
I mean, it's certainly, you're not the first person that suggested this to me, right? Like, this is something people have been talking about for a while. Bochy's out of contract at the end of the season.
And he said, I think even on the record, that he's not considering retiring.
Yeah, my assumption is he's going to stay in Texas. He did win the World Series down there, too. But, you know, it makes sense. The reason you would pick Melvin's option up, even if you're unsure about it, is you don't want to put him in a lame duck scenario.
Right.
A lot of organizations just would rather pay out the extra couple million dollars than deal with the manager being a lame duck all season. So that's why you might do it in an undecided type scenario. Melvin himself is a well-respected veteran manager, so I don't know that he's not like a Buster Posey manager. Like, if you told me that Buster Posey was hiring a manager, like, sight unseen, like, I would have had Bob Melvin pretty high up the list of potential hires. But yeah, I mean, there's a certain poetry to it. Plus, we know Buster Posey and Bruce Bochy are quite close personally, and, you know, that's like a mentor type figure for Posey. So it makes some sense. I don't know that in reality there's going to be a huge difference between Melvin and Bochy as managers. But, you know, that would be cool. It would be fun. I think it's possible. I think most likely is Bochy just stays in Texas. But yeah, I think it's possible he is going to be out of contract. It's kind of, it is a little hard to do that kind of maneuver because it's hard to get Bochy to sign up because he's not going to want to interview while Melvin still has the job.
Sure.
So you end up having to fire Melvin without knowing that you're going to be able to get Bochy. There's going to be a lot of respect there between those two guys, particularly as, you know, longtime veteran baseball guys.
All right. I just wanted to give Rob a little bit of attention here because he has an interesting idea, and then we'll get out of here.
Yeah.
Rob says, Bochy would be fun, but I want Nick Hundley. He's young and fresh and is currently working under Boch right now. I want him to lead this new core. What do you think about Hundley?
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys that kind of pops up. He was a catcher for a long period of time. I believe he's been in their front office, not their coaching staff. And he doesn't, he doesn't have much, if any, coaching experience. But yeah, the kind of...
Yeah, he is in the front office, you're right.
As a model, front office oriented former catcher, heady kind of catcher that had a really good reputation for pitcher handling. A lot of teams actually have went towards that direction for field staff. You know, there's everybody jokes about it, but the hiring pool for major league managers actually is former catcher a lot of the time. So yeah, it's not completely out of the question. Again, most managerial hires do have some kind of coaching or minor league managerial experience, but not 100%. AJ Hinch, when he got hired, had almost this exact resume. When he got hired the first time in Arizona, I believe, had this kind of resume. So that kind of, that hire does happen.
He's a special assistant to Young right now. The other thing is he's got a little bit of a Giants tie. He was here for, I think, a year. And famously, he and Yasiel Puig had words. So that's always good for Giants fans. Yeah. Is Yasiel Puig, one of the most hated players ever in Giants history. Hey, this was fun. I had a blast. I always have a blast talking to you just because I learn so much when I talk to you. But I really appreciate you. You have anything coming up that you want to... quickly?
No, not done. I have an article on Peyton Tolley coming out tomorrow on BP. Yeah, our book's coming out eventually. We're starting prospect lists and after the World Series, so in like 2 months, because that never actually ends.
Do you have a pick for the World Series?
I mean,
Milwaukee's a juggernaut. Do you believe?
Yeah, I mean, Detroit just like feels like. It feels like Tarik Skubal is going to be able to just like take over the postseason this year in a way that he wasn't really able to last year because the team around him is a lot better. Yeah, Milwaukee, they just lost Trevor McGill, their closer, and it's not clear if he's going to be back for the playoffs or not. And he's a really good power bullpen arm, so I think that's kind of a hit to them. But also that kind of baseball that they're playing, the really contact-heavy kind of pitching chaos model does tend to play pretty well in October now. So, yeah, I'll go with this would be the worst TV ratings Armageddon. Let's go with the Tigers and the Brewers in the World Series, and I'll take the Tigers. Damn. I am interested that the Tigers at some point could call up Kevin McGonigal, who we have as the top prospect in the game. He's tearing up Double A right now. Their actual problem is they don't really have anywhere to play him because they've gotten really good production out of like Gleyber Torres and Javi Baez this season. So yeah, it's kind of a weird scenario where they don't have room for the top prospect in baseball.
All right, man. This was a blast. Also, shout out to Rob, who was hanging out with us in the chat. So hopefully Brad will be back on Monday, I believe. I think we'll be back in our normal slot. But as always, Jarrett comes up in the clutch for me, and because it gives us a chance to talk about some stuff that Brad and I are not experts on in the least. So it's great to have someone who is has such a great reputation for this as Jarrett. So thanks again, man. And we'll do this. I don't know. Well, something crazy will happen, and we'll already have a thing scheduled, and it'll just happen when we're ready to talk next time.
All right. Thanks for having me on, Garrett.
All right. For Jarrett, I'm Double G. We will see you when we see you. Peace out.
Get your exterior painting to-dos done easily with Dutch Boy Pristine Exterior Paint. With its rain-rinse technology, rain naturally washes away dirt and grime. Plus, it resists cracking and peeling, making it perfect to withstand the harshest weather conditions. Save big money on pristine exterior paint and start your painting project today. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals happening this week. Save